Roy, are you there yet?
Trouble just, yeah, I'm having trouble just.
Yeah, when I share my screen, there's a higher probability that something will go wrong with my computer, but let's see. Can you see the agenda now?
I'm
Yeah.
seeing
I mean,
minutes.
the minute.
Yep, yes.
Okay. We have 37 people. That's pretty good. I wonder, like, if Sarah wanted to stay in. Do I have Sarah's email to be able to send her a link?
Sarah Mateau is already on the call.
Student? Sarah student?
Sarah student, Valencia.
Oh.
And I think we did have a dean. I'm not sure if she would have gotten the link in this email.
I can forward to Larissa.
Great, thank you.
Did
oh,
you
and,
send a Fernando on chat? Do you want me to do that?
I can do that, yes. Shirley. I'm already sending one out.
Oh, okay. Okay, thanks.
Save you the.
Thank you. Can somebody remind me, did we vote on, no, we were about to do the SEC report. Oh, Mary Mettler. I'm going to send her the link.
One thing for, before we got everybody in here, before we start going. For Zoom bombing that I avoid with my classrooms is I actually require everybody to turn on their cameras so you could kind of see who's who in there. Because if somebody's bombing, you won't recognize them, you know?
Just know that the Monica Zarsky is the Monica Zarsky. My camera's not working. Otherwise, I would.
You don't sound like Monica Zarsky.
I'm feeling really relaxed sitting on my couch, Greg.
I think everybody's wearing shorts right now, right?
I have, yes, shorts, sack attire. I would proudly be wearing my sack attire today.
Our Achilles heel is that being an open meeting, we need to post the Zoom link on the internet.
Oh.
It's on the stack.edu webpage, so anyone can find it.
Dang it.
Yeah, those open meetings.
Yes.
Damn right.
Good governance. Tough with it.
Too bad it doesn't post their emails.
Right?
You could see who each recipient or participant was with their email address.
That's true, but they could just be unregistered.
Yeah.
Are we at a point, well, you know what? I guess we need to get Fernando or Mary on the call.
I'm here.
Oh, great.
Yep.
Let's come back to, we'll come back to the SEC report later. I just sent the link to Mary. First of all, my apologies for everything that just happened in that previous meeting. That should not happen, but we have some challenges in terms of what we're required to do here. So thank you for bearing with us, and we lost a bunch of time there, unfortunately. But let's move on to item 5, which is a discussion of the emergency distance education addendum, and we are honored to have Dr. Ortiz here to present that item.
Thank you, Roy, and thanks for having me. I know that you got a busy agenda, so I'll try to take about 5 minutes to let the Academic Senate know where we are in terms of summer and fall, and then allow a little bit of time for some questions if there are any.
Did you have anything you needed on the screen?
Yeah, I sent this to Stephanie. Is she here?
I will try to find that. Sorry, it'll take me a moment.
Or I can share my screen if you'd like.
If it will let you, that would be great.
You have to end sharing on your end.
We probably have it set up to not allow you to share.
Okay, that's fine. I'll talk through some of the background, and then hopefully what I have pop up in a few minutes. So anyway, for any class to be taught online, as you all know, there needs to be a distance education addendum that needs to be approved through the Curriculum and Instruction Council. Given the abrupt pivot that we needed to do in March, the State Chancellor's Office permitted the colleges to submit a blanket emergency DE addendum for all courses so that they can be taught remotely. Of course, that was quite hastily done, but myself and working with Cheryl Lee's office, we were able to send that to the Chancellor's Office. For summer and fall, they are asking for more support documents and more thorough documentation of the courses that we will continue to offer remotely. So we need to, and by we, I mean my office, again, working with Cheryl Lee, will be submitting an emergency temporary distance education blanket addendum, quite a mouthful there, one for summer and a separate one for fall 2020. Of course, in anticipation, we need to have some contingencies in place because we really don't know where we're going to be in fall 2020. So what may be relevant to this body is that one of the items that we need to submit along with the list of courses that we are shifting over to remote instruction that do not currently have a DE addendum approved. We'll need to submit that list of courses, and we're close to finalizing that for summer. We also need to provide a list of courses that we plan to continue to offer face-to-face, and those are typically the hard-to-convert courses, lab courses, a lot of the CT courses. You know, we're still thinking through some of that, and of course, considering social distancing and how that would be accomplished is going to be really case by case. What probably is most relevant to all of you as faculty is that we also need to submit to the state our plan for local approval of all courses that are included in the addendum. So they would like for us, again, as a contingency, to have the addendum for all courses. So this year it's COVID-19. Next year it might be, I don't know, it might be some other disaster that closes our campus down. We know that there have been fires in other regions. There have been other natural disasters that cause a campus to close. So by having the DE addendum for all courses, that allows us to really flip the switch if we need to without you know, really having to scramble for approvals. The plan that we submit to the state needs to demonstrate what we intend to do at Santa Ana College by December 30th. So faculty do have some time. I've asked my curriculum office staff to generate a report of all courses who currently have distance education approval. I know that as a department chair for a long time, managing 12 courses, you kind of lose track of which one you submitted a D approval for. So it's good to have that list, and I've given it to Stephanie. I'm hoping that she can send that out to all of the senators so that you can then send it off to your division chairs to have them take a look at the courses that still do not have distance ed approval and begin the process of moving those courses through the curriculum process. We're working with Brian Soss to really help encourage faculty to do that as soon as possible. I know we're at the end of the academic year. There are some colleges that are proposing to have a couple of CIC meetings during the summer to help that process along. I'm going to let Dr. Soss determine whether that's something he wants to do with his council or not. But definitely we need to have something in place and submit it to the state demonstrating our plan for DE approval. So in addition to that, I know I'm saying a lot of stuff here. We also need to have a plan for ongoing professional development for faculty and staff for converting to online instruction. So I know that Cheryl is going to talk a bit about that, and we really need to have a solid plan about what we're going to do. And Cheryl and her office have done a tremendous job of supporting faculty in the last month and a half, as you all know. But going forward, we really need to develop a robust training process for faculty so that the state feels good about the delivery of instruction moving forward. So I'm at a little over 6 minutes. I'll go ahead and stop there to see if there are any questions for me. And I apologize for not having the image. Everything I just shared were in some bulleted notes, but I'm sure Stephanie can send those along to all of you for reference. So any questions for me?
It looks like Josh has a comment. I'm gonna.
Yeah.
It looks like Josh, go ahead.
You mentioned the hard to convert courses. So will we need addendums for all the courses like that we don't currently have them for? Like looking towards the fall, if we have to offer them remote?
Yeah, Josh, I think it's best just to include all of our courses in the document that we submit, just as a contingency. We'll do our best, and we're working with your dean to see what we can do about accommodating some or more labs. But at this point, I would say let's just include all courses that currently do not have a DE addendum, and that'll protect us.
Thank you.
I see, is there a deadline for submission to the local? I'm not sure what that's a reference to. We do, the deadline that, go ahead.
The state wants it by December, but how soon does the college want it?
Oh, I'm sorry, the state wants our DE addendum documents by May 20th for summer. In that documentation, we need to have a plan outlined for how we will be approving courses for distance education locally. So outlining what our plan is from now until December 30th. Yes, the state wants DE forms on all courses by December 30th as a contingency. So again, considering that whether it's another pandemic 2 years from now, or like I said, something else, we need to be ready to flip the switch and really have all of those approvals in place.
Sorry if this was already covered. I've heard that maybe as SEC is doing something where they have a DE addendum that only applies in state emergencies, but normally that cost is not offered online. Did you say something about that, or is that an option?
No, I don't know about SEC's process that doesn't sound
I'll jump in.
Sure. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah. So SEC has what they're calling an EDEA, Emergency Distance Ed Addendum. We're probably going to be discussing and probably adopting the language that's been thrown around some of the chancellor's office meetings, that is a FOMA addendum. And so that would be fully online
with mutual
agreement. And so it would be a separate DE addendum from our traditional DE addendum. And the reality of this is the mutual agreement refers to really our sciences and those difficult to convert courses where we don't normally want those courses taught fully online because of the complications with articulation that might come in the future. You know, if there's a wildfire and it lasts for a month, the CSUs and UCs might not give a hoot that we had to go fully online for 3 weeks. And so in this case, the articulation agreements are all in place, but it may not be in another situation. And so the mutual agreement puts the faculty in the driver's seat of saying, yes, I recognize I might need to go fully online with this course, but we're going to have to talk about this first. And when you write or request is what we're looking at, request that the curriculum office staff or META generates a FOMA DE addendum, you're looking at that course will only be offered online when faculty mutually agree that this is an emergency situation and this course cannot or should not be taught in a face-to-face format. Hopefully that clarified.
Thank you, Brian.
So that'll be discussed Monday at CIC of next week. And so Shirley, if you want to jump in, I know Shirley has prepared a DE blanket sort of addendum locally for us that we're going to discuss and try and implement, but first it's going to CIC Council for discussion Monday.
Right, the DE advisory group created kind of a generalized one that can be used for hopefully most classes, and CIC can discuss and see if they want to do that and adopt that for those courses that only want that DE addendum for these emergency times. So yeah, that'll be discussed Monday.
I have a quick question. I don't know if this has already been addressed. I'm sorry, this is Maria. I know that we're scheduled to continue to offer services remotely until the end of summer. Did you guys mention about fall? Are we scheduled to be back on campus for sure in the fall? Or are we also doing remotely in the fall?
I'll try to cover that in the president's report, but I would say it's likely.
Okay. Thanks. I wasn't sure if it was covered. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Fernando. And I'm sorry we didn't have your document posted, but we'll sort that out somehow.
That's okay. I'll have Stephanie send it out to everyone. She has it.
Great. Coming back to our agenda, we skipped over the SEC Academic Senate report, and it looks like Mary's found her way here. Mary, are you able to give that report now?
Yes, I am. Let me just get my screen here. So we actually are covering two of the same items that you covered. So we proposed a resolution that we passed after we did just one reading with it. The resolution was to direct our CIC to create the temporary blanket DE addendum. So that's being discussed here with you guys as well. And then we also, the second resolution, we only did the first reading on it, was adoption of emergency schedule course descriptions. FARSED has requested that we go ahead and have some distance ed related course descriptions. that we vetted with our DE faculty. And so after the first reading that was passed, and I think you all are going to be discussing that as well in a couple of minutes. And that's the end of my report.
Any questions or comments for the FCC report?
No.
Great.
Okay, thank you, Mary. All right, so I think this now brings us to that topic, which is those descriptions of remote formats in emergencies. And I'm going to try to find that document and share it. Okay, you'll let me know if you can't see this document that's called Emergency Schedule Distance Education Course Format Descriptions. Basically, it gives a brief definition of distance education, and it defines three class formats that can be used in emergency situations such as this. The first one is online classes. This is the format that you are familiar with. We've been doing this for years very well under Cheryl Lee's leadership and our distance ed advisory group. You can read that definition. The second one is called online live classes. These again are distance education classes as viewed by Title V. They primarily meet in a remote classroom at regularly scheduled times throughout the term. Some flexible in-class work may be completed outside of the normally scheduled class meeting times throughout the term. All right, so this is often referred to as remote synchronous. I think another possible name of this is remote live classes. But the idea is it's primarily a live time where students can get instantaneous interaction with their instructor. And then the last one is called online blended, online classes with some regularly scheduled meeting times and times in a remote classroom. Students will be expected to log in and be present during these times. A class with scheduled proctored exams or a live orientation is considered a combination class. Please check the course description for live attendance expectations. So the idea here is that some of the class would be at a normally scheduled time, but there might be some work that's done at different times. This description goes by a couple different names. It's been called online, or it's been called remote, asynchronous, and synchronous. And I think there's another name that Shirley had in some document. Another possible name would be both live and on demand. Both live and on demand. So that's the discussion on these. I will let you know that there have been other formats proposed, and I'll tell you what those are just so you know what's missing and not included in this proposal. One of them is hybrid classes, which we've been offering for years. They primarily meet online, but they have some regular on-campus meetings. So maybe there's a weekly lab or something along those lines where meeting on campus is part of the course. That's not included in these definitions. And there's another kind of course that's not listed here, and that's a completely asynchronous course. So we decided, I shouldn't say that. So the District Academic Senate, which is composed of leadership from Santa Ana College Senate and the SCC Senate, met last Friday to discuss this and a couple other topics, but primarily this. And that group thought that it would just be confusing to students to have something that's completely asynchronous, but is not an online class. So that's why that one isn't there. I would say the overall sort of like guiding principle of this proposal is to keep it simple for students. So there's three things and they're largely different. There could be more combinations of these, but we felt this would be the easiest for students to understand the distinctions. And so there are those two that just are not included here. So I guess at this point, it's open for discussion, but at some point I'd like to ask you, one, are you okay with these having just these three kinds of courses? And then the second question would be, we could debate what the names of them are. But let's focus on that first thing. Are you okay with just having these kinds of class formats during emergency times such as this? We'll open it up for discussion. Any comments or questions?
Roy, I have a question about this. Yeah. Sally.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, so just to clarify, and I ask this because a lot of our classes are offered hybrid, just like you said, and at least in our department, when we do an offer a hybrid class, we try to balance it almost 50-50. So a lot of the work is online and a lot of the work is in class. Now, that's not included here, as you mentioned. Does this mean that we cannot offer them anymore, or this is a different list? So I'm a bit confused about that.
Thank you.
List, that doesn't mean we cannot offer it, right?
No, you definitely can offer it. It just would go by the name online blended during emergency time.
I see. Okay. So the typical hybrid that we do is blended.
Yeah. Again, this is it's debatable, but the general principle was that students would have a hard time distinguishing from something that's partly asynchronous and partly synchronous versus what we usually would call a hybrid course, because the hybrid class isn't meeting on campus. So it would just fall under this different category during emergency time.
Roy, this is Shirley. Can I ask a question about this?
Of course.
Thanks. So this is the course, we'll decide on names, but the course format and descriptions. And where is this, like, would this be published somewhere? Because I know that the ITF coding can't change for MIS, but where would this be posted?
Let me tell you the history of this, and I think it addresses your question, but let me know. So what happened was, FARSIT is working on a MOU with the district, and so they felt like they needed to have some definition of the kinds of formats that we're going to be offering. And so they came to both academic senates and said, hey, we need some definition. So that's why the district senate got together and discussed this and came up with this. So probably, I think what I'm getting to, the answer to your question, is that something like this probably is going to end up in an MOU.
Okay, thank you, that helps.
Right. Is it not also the intent for this to be transparency for the student? So in the class schedule, if we're in an emergency situation, we're going to be presenting this information in the class schedule online.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to be implemented in WebAdvisor. And I think Shirley might have some thoughts on that, but these definitions aren't necessarily for for posting in WebAdvisor, but they I suppose they could be.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Roy. And the reason for that is because the MIS reporting remains the same. Like if it's a lecture class, it still needs to be coded as like lecture, even if it's remote, remotely live or remote, you know, on demand, or if it's online. So this, it sounds like this is strictly for FARSET and MOU purposes, and the students to get more information. If you have looked at the summer schedule, you'll see like the room already says Canvas, and the building, if it's gonna be totally remote, says off campus. So it should be clear enough for students, and then they'll be asked to click on the section for comments where, you know, each of the section will have more information. For some of the CTE classes, maybe it's like, and we're still going to meet, you know, once for whatever, in person something. So I don't believe this will be used in WebAdvisor, Ryan.
This is Mary from SCC. During our discussion last week, we did speak to FARSET being the driving force behind this, but we also had discussed an intention to let students have an awareness of this so that they would know the method of instruction for the summer courses also. And we'd be able to assign one of these definitions for student purposes as well.
Yeah, sure. That's a good point, Mary. On WebAdvisor, the shared screens that we have between the, you know, just district WebAdvisor screen, it'll be pretty general in terms of, you know, if it's remote instruction and you need to have a device and internet connection perhaps, and to make sure to click on your section's comments, because your SECs and SACs might be slightly different. You know, we choose our wording differently, so this might be the wording that you use, and ours might be just slightly different. But yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Was there another comment?
Yeah, Roy, can I add a couple of comments?
Please do.
Yeah, first is I think it has values to narrow them down like this. So when we talk about format of instruction, we know it's one of these three. So we, you know, speak the same language, so to speak. Secondly, currently we have some, you know, because we're in the middle of the semester and we have to deal with COVID. So we have people doing asynchronous while faculty are not certified, and there are concerns about that. So it's good to have like online classes, and I think Shirley will talk more about it later. That is, if you want to do online classes, you have to be certified. Online live classes and online blended, you don't need to be online certified, but you need certain kind of certification and so on. So there are values to organizing them into certain things like this. I personally think eventually at some point, maybe not summer, it would be good for our students to know this in the course description so they can see exactly what to expect and so on. If we're not ready for summer, we're not ready for summer. And then one last thing that I was going to point out is, and I just forgot my thought, sorry. So I'll just stop it. So, right, the thing that maybe it's good for each of us to consider right now is, thing in your program, is there any class that doesn't fit into these three formats or not? Okay, if there's another class, like one gentleman asked earlier, if there's a class that doesn't fit into this format, do you need another definition, or it can be put in the online blended? So those are the points that I want to make.
Thank you, William. Any further discussion on this? I guess now sort of a minor issue is these names, and maybe you like these names, or maybe you prefer to use the word remote. I'll just mention a couple other options, not to muddy the waters, but some other possible names for that second one is called remote live, as opposed to online live. And another possible name for the third one is called both live and on demand.
I would probably vote that we change the names, Roy, just because I think it would confuse our students just to see the online and all of them and say, well, what really is the difference, right? I think changing the name would be a good thing.
Okay. So are you saying like
Roy?
The one you, yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah. So online live classes, you said remote, we can change that to remote, or that's an option for remote live classes?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the remote live classes, I think it works, but for the last one, especially because hybrid is part of it, the online blended, I think if you wanna add on demand, that will be confusing, at least to me and a lot of my students, because on demand means whenever I demand, because if I want to watch a movie on demand, I sit in front of my TV and bring up a movie, right? That's not how the class is going to work. They can't demand me to show up and lecture to them. So, you know, on demand seems a little weird to me. And that's just me. Sorry, I just wanted to put my two cents in. But remote thing, I think, works.
Yeah, I agree.
This is Mary from SCC. The terminology that we used, the first one was scheduled remote instruction, and the bottom one was combined online instruction.
Mary, though, this came out of the district level meeting between the VPs, though, right? And so whatever you guys put forward and we put forward has now been blended to what we're seeing by a level above us, correct?
I don't have feedback from that meeting. I just have the last Senate meeting. I'll text DeCarbo right now and see if they change the verbiage.
Yeah, this afternoon I texted him and he said, he basically gave these three names that I originally had on the screen, online, online live, and online blended. But we have heard some comments about maybe the second one should be called remote live. And then Ali making the case for not including the word on demand in the third one. Any further comments on the names of these three formats?
Roy, this is Fernando. Can I comment just briefly here?
Sure.
I think there was a desire to give maximum flexibility to students and make the distinction between what we traditionally have used the word online for. So to say an online class and then an online hybrid would kind of protect the integrity of our online teaching certificate, and that's what we traditionally have done. And then offering two more options, one would be what we would call remote live, and that would allow for the instructor to provide synchronous content as well as asynchronous content. And then the final option, remote on demand. I understand Ali's concern, and I guess the demand really isn't on from the student demanding the instructor to deliver the content whenever the student wants, but to have the content available on demand. So I don't know if that confuses the issue, but again, the interest in kind of separating the traditional online OTC courses and then these remote synchronous or asynchronous instruction.
Thank you, Fernando. This is Shirley. I agree. And when I saw online for all of those, that's a little misleading to what might be required of faculty. I like having it online just for the first or online and hybrid. But online, remote live and remote something else on demand or remote blended makes good sense for us.
Roy, could I chime in for a moment to Rebecca?
Yes, please.
I tried to make a comment earlier in the chat, but I'm not sure if people are reviewing it. So what I had said, and then I just felt like it was somewhat echoed by Sara from ASG, is that the live version or number two, I think that would make a lot of sense to students who are have a lot of experience like in social media, because they have, you know, Facebook Live or Instagram Live or YouTube Live, and that represents to them or anybody who's social media savvy that they need to be there live. So and I also kind of hesitate a little bit with the remote idea, although I do understand and appreciate the need to differentiate between online and the others, because from a student perspective, and it would be great if Sara, or I don't know if Teddy's here today, could chime in on this, is that this shift from, you know, traditional courses to temporary remote or remote instruction is, I think it's been somewhat traumatic for students, and for them to see that kind of coming back at them again during the summer or the fall might kind of trigger those types of ideas of, oh, I'm in this again, as opposed to having the verbiage that it is similar across all three different models, meaning I'm going to be doing this online, but then shows slightly different shades of what's going to be expected of them.
I wanted to chime in a little bit with, I agree with Ms. Ortiz with that, Professor Ortiz, where, it's true. I feel like it would be a little bit better for the students to kind of go in knowing specifically what each course is going to require, just because obviously the semester was harder because it just happened in the middle of it and there was nothing we could really do. But since we kind of have more preparation for the fall, it is going to be online, having that clarity that what each class is going to require from you. So like I did mention on the comments in the chat box that online live is something that when I hear live, I know that I have to go on and meet with whoever is on the other side of the screen, or so I know that I have to be there personally. So that's a helpful word in any way that could be used. And then as well as just also having that clarification that what each class is going to be, what you're going to be expected from each class. So either fully online or fully, or either like like online live, I wouldn't understand like, okay, it's an online course, but I will have to meet live for certain times. So I think that would be helpful just to make it clear what each class is going to be expected, or what is expected from each student, if that helps.
Thank you. Yeah, it is helpful to have a student perspective here. So it sounds like we've had the most discussion about this second one here, and it sounds like we've got two options, online live or remote live. I guess one way we could do this is somebody could make a motion for one of them, and if the other names are okay, let's have the motion include all of that and one of these.
And, I have a question, Roy, though. First, with the term online or remote, Shirley alluded to this earlier, and Jody just confirmed, if we call something online, that implies a certain level of certification and expectation from the faculty. And is that what we mean by that second definition, that the faculty will be expected to be online certified as defined by the current standards?
I'm going to make a comment, and then if Shirley wants to comment too, that's fine. I feel like these names are primarily for students to understand the format of the course, not necessarily the certification of the instructor teaching it. But our next item will be to directly correlate which training should apply to which of these three categories. So that would be something that we would be discussing in the next item. Shirley, do you want to give your perspective on this?
Well, you know, I mean, we all want, thank you, we all want clarity, you know, first and foremost. But I do think that it's kind of like when students were first asked in a survey, like after 1 week, so how was your online class? And when I saw that question, I thought, oh my goodness, the perception now is what they're taking is an online class. And that's not, you know, that wasn't true for, you know, for the majority of classes. So I'm just thinking that that term, you know, online, we know what online means here at SAC in terms of faculty and students before this period had the same perception of what an online class is. So I know online means, you know, that they're working, you know, online. And I guess it depends if we're actually going to publish this or if this is really a Farset MOU, then it doesn't matter to me so much. But if it's published, there is a difference between an online class and a remote live class or a remote, you know, asynchronous or blended, whatever we want to call it. So that's my only concern, because hopefully this day will end. And students, and who knows what will happen with what we want to offer later, but online classes represent a different level of type of class too. So that's my only thought.
Okay, there's some discussion on the chat about maybe adding the phrase emergency to the beginning of them, or maybe just emphasizing that this is for emergencies. Any discussion on that particular topic? And we will have to try to wrap this up in a couple of minutes, but I want to make sure that we've hashed out all the concepts that people want to bring up.
Can I just ask one thing for clarification? I'm sorry, this is Luis.
Go ahead, Luis.
Okay, so my understanding, just along with what Cheryl Lee was saying, and I think what's been mentioned already, is that to me, online classes sounds like something that is like, I mean, it's not trademark, but in my head, or like when a student hears it, trademark or online means online something. And there's an understanding of what online is. And so the other two should have something different. So the online blended, is that taken off? Are we already talking about taking that off as a name?
I haven't heard a lot of discussion about the third name. Somebody wants to discuss that, we could, but
because to me, even if whatever we do with the second one, the live class, remote live, but again, to me, just having the word online, it doesn't sound right for any of them except the top one, and the other one should be something different. But it, you know, and I would make a motion along those lines, as long as this is where the path that we're going. And keeping that emergency temporary course formats.
I agree with Thank that. I think remote live and possibly remote blended. This is Jennifer. For the last one, as Brian Soss suggested, and I guess I'm still trying to wrap my brain around the difference between the execution or the delivery of the second and the third. The remote live versus remote blended. And I'm thinking remote blended looks like you actually have in-person meetings that would be happening on campus. And I'm just wondering if there were a true emergency like now, that really wouldn't be an option anyway. So I'm not quite sure how, I guess it's an option to have, but it may not be too different than in practice than a remote live class. But I believe, again, taking out the word online is important for clarity. Even if this isn't published, I think that moving forward for future reference and clarity, I think it's important to really be consistent in the terms we use. And then that way it isn't confusing to students. And eventually faculty and students will really come to understand what those terms really mean. So online, remote live, remote blended, mm-hmm. I would recommend.
Yeah.
Can okay. I add, this is Kara. Can I Go just ahead. Add, what about scheduled remote for the second one? Kind of following up with what was just said. Because then it's students know it's scheduled, but it's also remote. Just another option.
So this is Susan. Um, I
I completely agree with everything that Chair Lee, what's been going on in the chat. And I think we're getting away, we're confusing the issue about this being language for students and this being language for ourselves to understand this more. Because we had a discussion early on about what's in WebAdvisor right now. And that's the language that is available in WebAdvisor. And as long as we're clear as faculty about what this all means, I think it will translate to students. So if this is about like the MOU, getting an agreement about what each of these things are, I'm in agreement that we shouldn't use a language of online except for online classes where instructors are certified. And that some version of remote live or remote blended or sounds like the best option.
All right, in terms of moving this along, I think we actually have maybe three or four decisions to make. First of all, do we agree with having these three formats, regardless of the name?
Yes.
The second is, should we be using the word online or remote in the second two? And then a next decision is, should we include the word temporary or emergency? Would somebody like to make a motion that we approve the concept of having these three formats, regardless of the name?
I'll make a motion to accept those three formats. And then worry about the names after.
I'll second.
Is there a second to that?
I'll second that. This is Louise Janice.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion on that? Okay, I'm going to ask, is there any opposition to that motion? I'm not hearing any, and I don't see any hands raised. All in favor, say yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Okay, that passed. Thank you. That was the hard part. Well, I mean, that was the most substantive part. The hard part might be these details, but let's see if we can tackle the next question. I think the next question is whether for these second two, do we want to use the word online or remote?
Do you need a motion?
Sure. Would somebody like to propose one or the other?
I would like to propose that we just keep online for online classes and that the bottom two have something different that is either scheduled or live, or scheduled or remote, and then the last one be remote blended or combined online, but not online as the first word. Is that too long of a motion?
It would be you could make a motion like that, but it would be helpful if you just suggested one as part of your motion, and then we could debate that.
Okay, so then the motion would be keep online as the first one, and the other two not include online as a word.
There you go.
How's that?
Okay. I'm interpreting that to be something like this.
Okay, I can accept something like that. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Is there a second for that motion to not use the word online in the second two definitions?
Oi, this is Rebecca. I'll second it, and I'd also like to mention that in the chat, it looks like there's a lot of support for using the word remote for the last two.
Okay, thank you for highlighting that. We have heard, both sides of the story here. Any further discussion about whether to use the word remote or whether to use the word online or something else?
No.
Okay.
No, we're good.
Okay. We might need to do a roll call vote on this one. Stephanie, are you able to do that?
You know, there is a voting feature on Zoom. You can actually set it up as actual vote.
Yeah, and normally we wouldn't do that because some people need to join by phone, but since we've already disallowed that, it might not be a bad idea. Let's try that, given our extenuating circumstances. If you're on a computer, oh, I don't know if this works on the app. We'll try it. If there's a lot of people who don't vote, we might need to do this differently. But there's a motion and a second on the table to not use the word online in the second two definitions. If you're in favor of that, could you click the yes check marks, or we'll accept a thumbs up?
Where's a check?
I'll give you a moment to find that.
Can you ask that question one more time, Roy, to use the word remote in the last two?
Yeah, so sorry, it's a little bit confusing. So the motion is to not use the word online in the second two definitions. So if you like the word online, you should vote no. If you like the word remote, vote yes. I'll say that again and hopefully not mess it up. If you like the word online, vote no. If you like the word remote, vote yes.
But does that mean online for just the first one?
Luis, yes. Online, the yes is what you proposed.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me. Yeah. I want to make sure what I vote. So mine should be no, correct?
No, yours should be yes.
Oh, God.
Thank you.
You said remote for the last two.
Correct. Remote for the last two and online for the first one.
Yes.
So my vote should be?
Yes.
Thank you. That's what I thought I had.
So people are also voting in chat too, that I've noticed. Are we going to vote? Are we voting in by, does that matter how we vote? Whether by chat or?
It very cumbersome to vote by chat, but if you can't vote on the app or the website, then we might need to figure that out.
Because I'm not sure if people know, like, they need to click on participant at the bottom of the screen to bring up the raise hand, the yes or the no.
Okay.
And that's how you have to vote. That's how you vote for yes. Because I've just been noticing people have been doing that in chat.
Do you mind repeating those instructions again?
Well, no.
So at the bottom of the Zoom screen, you know, there's the how you unmute yourself, you start the video, and this is if you're on a laptop or desktop. And then there's a participants. So if you bring up the list of participants, you should have all of those capabilities to raise your hand to say yes or no.
Thank you. Okay. I think we're going to just now ask for the, if you like the word online, you can vote no on this motion. I don't see any no's.
No.
Yeah, we don't have any no, Roy.
Okay. If you want to vote no on this, now's your last chance. Please speak up. Okay, we're calling it. Luis's motion passes, so we will not be using the word online in these last two definitions. And I think the last main question is, should we include the word temporary on all three definitions? Should we have a heading about temporary? Or do you prefer the word emergency? Would somebody like to make a motion on that?
I don't think it's needed anymore, Roy, sorry, because earlier we had online confusing between regular online and emergency online, but now we're not using online anymore. I'm not sure if any other term is needed, but that's my personal opinion.
I agree.
Okay. Do you want to make that as a motion?
Sure. Just keep it as remote, whatever else after that, and remote blended or whatever, but no temporary, no emergency in the front needed.
Any further discussion on that?
I second it.
And we've got a second. If anyone is opposed, could you say no? Okay, all in favor say yes.
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 Okay. Are you happy with what we ended up with?
No, I just have one more question. I don't know if it's too late to ask. Yes. And maybe this was addressed earlier. And in the last one, there isn't the term, it doesn't say this is a distance education class. Is that intentional? Or is that something like the first to say these are distance ed classes? Is that by design?
Yeah. I guess one fix to that would be to change this word, which might be confusing anyway, to distance education. Does that solve the problem?
I would maybe defer to Cheryl Lee, if she's still here, to just to confirm that that would be an accurate use of that.
Yeah, I like that better. I hadn't read the details of these. Yeah, that makes good sense to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on this? Okay. In my judgment, I think we've voted enough on this item that I think what's on the screen is approved by the Senate. But if you disagree with that judgment, please speak up.
Cheryl Lee, can you explain why we just added distance ed to the last one?
Well, because it's still going to be remote, so I guess we still want to let the students and faculty know that it's going to be remote, but there will be times when they'll have to come. See, I'm reading remote classroom, but I thought this was the one where they might. Is this the synchronous and asynchronous together, or is this the on-site one?
That's synchronous and asynchronous.
Okay. So remote classroom. I think we could probably say that a little clearer.
I think, especially if we plan to use these for future emergencies, which I'm not sure if they're applicable because every emergency is different. Regardless, the less language we put in there, I think the less confusion it's going to have. You know, so for the first one, online classes, you can leave it in there because it's truly 100% online classes. But I don't see for the second one, remote live, and the third one, remote blended. I think putting the first sentence in there about distance education, it just create more complication because for a class that may need some face-to-face, like career education or something, if you put distance education in there, now it seems to exclude those classes.
But I thought this one is one that is referring to classes that will meet live, or are we saying their live meeting would be only on site? Because then you're right, William, it's not.
But we have only three types, Cheryl Lee. So we want the remote blended to cover everything then.
Right, so that remote, I see what you're saying. This remote blended is to cover asynchronous and if we're meeting on
site. Face-to-face, yeah.
Yeah, both,
that's right.
Okay. So then,
I actually think that the top explains it. It's the emergency scheduled distance education course format. Mm-hmm. So this is only for the DE courses. And so the bottom one refers just to the synchronous and asynchronous. The in-person classes, I think, are going to be addressed separately.
if we're sure about that, then whether we have distance ed in the last one or not, there's not a huge difference anymore. But we need to make sure the formats that we have here cover all classes.
Listen, I don't know if Mary from SCC is still on. Stephanie, you might have been there. And Roy. Look, Michael DeCarbo was engaged in conversations with the union, and I don't know that we should be messing with the descriptions of these areas. I understand the interest in changing the names, but I thought that we were pretty much settled on the descriptions after meeting with SCC on Friday last week.
This is Mary, and I'm on, and I agree with what you've said, that this was the original intention, was to leave the descriptions as they were.
And Michael DeCarbo walked us through this, and that, yes, that one on the bottom is what we started with 2 or 3 weeks ago as synchronous and asynchronous. And so the faculty has more flexibility when they select to teach a remote blended class. If you choose to teach a remote live class, you're expected to be there during the scheduled times each time, and your students are expected. And so let's say we schedule a fall schedule with remote live, and this time meets 8:35 to 10. And the schedule's already out, students have picked their classes, the faculty has an assignment, and week 8, they say, we're bringing everybody back, the campus is clear. Those students have to meet at 8:35 to 10. There is no other option, it's not a hybrid. Those students come back to campus, the faculty member teaches his class or her class at 8:35 to 10 someplace. If it's a remote blended, it's like a hybrid class, which is synchronous and asynchronous, and there'll have to be some sort of agreement as to what times it's meeting on campus. Now, DeCarbo and the SEC group also agreed that we have a lot of unanswered questions here, but the importance of this document was to allow flexibility in answering those questions as to what happens if we are brought back mid-semester. Or let's say we schedule the fall, and July, we're told there will be no remote instruction. We're coming back in the fall. And so we need this flexibility in these areas. And I understand the interest in changing the names, but that's about it.
All right. I know that there's lots more that we could discuss on this, and we haven't nailed down exactly what the Academic Senate thinks about the wording of these, but I think that's all that we can do today. And I'm actually very proud of what we've accomplished by now, but I think we need to move on to our other agenda items. So we're just going to leave it like that for now, and then if somebody wants this to come back to the next meeting, we can, and we can hash it out a little bit more thoroughly.
Okay.
Moves us on to, I think this is the training for those items. And so this brings us to item 6, what we called 6B, remote instruction training plan. And
Shirley.
And we've got a slideshow, which I'm going to find.
Cheryl Lee emailed it. She CC'd you into it. Sorry.
I have it in front of me, and I'm going to put that on the screen. Okay. Should I try to put this in? Show the slideshow?
Yeah, because this isn't in Chrome. So can you do a presentation mode, Roy?
How do you see it right now?
In the first page. Yeah, on the first page, and then the ones on the side.
Okay. Let me try sharing a different screen then.
It's the right screen. I think you just have to go to slideshow.
Yeah, if you could click the
play or something like that.
I'd help, but I think this is a Mac. I don't know. know where anything is. As Roy's finding it, I have to tell you guys, this is like the most exciting Zoom call that I've been on, Zoom meeting I've been on.
Yeah, I hope we don't have any more exciting Zoom calls. can you see this now?
Yeah, thank you very much. So you control the mouse, Roy. If you could click to the next screen. Thank you. So in what Fernando was mentioning, the CCC, the Chancellor's Office, having the emergency temporary DE blanket addendum for summer and fall, they wanted two things to be submitted along with the list of courses. They wanted a CIC, a curriculum plan for how we were going to do the DE addendum and have an addenda for all of them. And they also wanted a professional development plan and our ongoing plan for certification. So thank you. So that's what we need to submit for faculty that are converting to online instruction. And they want this delivered for summer and then the next wave again for our fall classes as well. So thank you, Roy. Remote instruction is still viewed as online or DE. We've kind of been discussing that when we're talking about remote instruction. For ACCJC, just so that everybody realizes, ACCJC recognizes distance education and everything else, lecture, lab, work experience, and so forth. Hybrid is under distance education. There is no separate, it is not recognized, it is DE. Remote instruction is also still viewed as online or DE as well. And so our current Senate resolution is that faculty require the online teaching certification for a DE course. Roy, you're so good. Or is there an alternative? So the DE advisory group, and I'm here on behalf of the DE advisory group, we put a lot of time and thought into this because when I pulled numbers for summer, there are 60 faculty in the summer schedule that currently do not have an online teaching certificate and that are also not enrolled in the current spring online teaching certification. For fall, when I ran that spreadsheet this morning, there's 563 faculty. This is unduplicated. I'm not looking at sections, I'm looking at numbers of faculty. We have a very large college and we need to get everybody certified. So Roy, if you could click the next one, what is our possible alternative? CCC says we need to plan for continuity and resiliency for emergencies because the next one could be a wildfire or a different type of virus. And then the next bullet is that the DE advisory group suggests consideration of a remote instruction certificate. And we'll look at that in just a minute. Could you go to the next slide? So what we're doing right now is we've got for summer, we're doubling the number of cohorts for the online teaching certification. And this is currently what we have, and it's Academic Senate approved. We have preparation for the online teaching certificate, which is the bronze certificate, and then three self-paced courses that go through quizzes. And then the certificate itself in the summer is 8 weeks. And the total number of flex hours for all of this, the prep and the online teaching certificate is 137 hours. So we're doubling the number of cohorts for summer. And the next slide, Roy, shows we're also doubling the number of cohorts for fall. So even with doubling the number of cohorts, we cannot get through even half of all of the faculty that require a certification for fall. Next slide, please, Roy. So the proposal of a remote instruction certificate that could be used in any type of emergency, it doesn't mean that that faculty could teach an online course, but it does mean that in another emergency that that faculty could teach when we do, you know, our emergency remote again. This is all self-paced and it could begin now. So the remote instruction certificate would be submission of what we call the Canvas Silver Certificate, which is the Canvas homepage, our template filled out, basically the homepage filled out with your name and class, the Canvas syllabus, the course information module completed with your instructor information and your welcome email, and then two modules. And I'll get to that in a second. Then the other self-paced items are Canvas Silver Badge, that you know how to use Canvas, accessibility training, and Confer Zoom. This is a newly added training course that we will, that we're in the process of creating. So it's all self-paced. And the purpose really of that Canvas Silver Certificate is that we need to make sure if all faculty do not go through the online teaching certificate, is that we make sure that as remote instructors that we are doing Title V training. And Title V is that instructor-student contact and now new as of last year or 2 years ago is required student-to-student contact. So spring is kind of has been a semester of, gosh, get your content out there, make sure you can, you know, do your assessments on Canvas. And that's been a really, I mean, a huge change for everybody, as you know. Well, summer and fall are being looked upon as now the expectation is higher. Now you're opting into it. It's not like it was thrown on you. That's how CCC and ACCJC are looking at it now. So we must have Title V and we must make sure that the course and all materials in the course are accessible. And so the DE Advisory Group feels that this remote instruction certificate would help to assure that the students are getting the quality courses that they expect to get, that faculty are trained and prepared, feel confident in being able to provide all of this, including Title V and accessibility for their students. And these items here for the Canvas Silver Cert, the badges, accessibility training, this also is a nice stepping stone to if that faculty then decides, I do want to take the online teaching certificate. This is really with the exception of one course, the video creation course, this completes the prerequisite. So I don't see this as a loss of time if somebody thought, well, I'm not sure, I don't know, maybe I want to do the online teaching certificate, you know, in a following semester. This really is good prep. So I think my next slide is just the questions. Oh no. Roy, could you go to the next slide? So I'm going to include this so that it can be sent out. Just a couple thoughts, just so that you're all aware, because we all go to so many different meetings. The CCC Distance Ed Coordinator meeting, Marty Alvarado from CCC was there. And what really struck me was some of the things she said. So she said, whatever you're requiring right now in terms of local colleges for preparation for faculty, are prepared based on what you require at the local level. So we can determine what we feel is necessary for our remote instructors. And then she also said that we need to plan for continuity and resiliency, and this will not be the last emergency. So the focus is to ensure that we can continue. And then the next slide has a link to the emergency blanket DE addenda, so that if you wanted to see what was required that we submit by May 5th and the other by July 1st. And then a memo from ACCJC kind of asking the colleges, how are we providing for DE and CE options for students? And DE is distance ed, CE is correspondence ed. And I want to make it really clear, at SAC, we don't do any correspondence ed, we only do distance ed. Correspondence ed is the telecourses, which we no longer offer. Telecourses do not do any Title V, and we don't offer that. And everything that we mark as distance ed here at SAC. So, and I think the next slide is just discussion. I don't know if there's, if I should go back to any of these slides or if there's any questions, we can discuss that now. But this is from the DE Advisory Group, and we just felt for throughput and to assure that the college is covered and faculty are prepared, that this would be, thank you, Roy, that this remote instruction certificate would be the best option.
Rory, may I ask a question? This is Monica, just to clarify something.
Go for it, Monica.
Hi, Seven. Shirley, just out of curiosity, just to clarify, if we've already completed some of these requirements, that would be known by distance ed, right? And we would just complete the parts that we haven't yet done?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I don't know if I'm speaking out of turn yet, but I was talking with Mary Hipst about this, and I think what can be done is also, I know faculty are concerned about flex, and for example, if they did it now, could they, but they didn't need hours now, what would they do? And unfortunately, this is recorded, but what you would do is you would submit that for fall and claim that in fall.
That would be in my next question, because I know that's come up too, is that in terms of this semester, I know a lot of faculty have, you know, really been doing a lot of different things that have been boosting that flex credit in one semester. And then seeing if maybe that was something that a discussion could happen, I guess, Roy and Mary, that could we look at spreading that out across completion of this whole year and not just in one semester?
Yeah, if it's any of these self-paced DE type courses, Monica, then, you know, Vivian will mark it when you do it, but it's when you claim it and you submit for it that that's when the credit will roll.
Perfect. Thank you, Shirley. Thanks for everything.
Oh, no problem.
Will they need to complete this for fall if we're remote in fall?
You know, I think that would be ideal. You know, we could look at different options in terms of like if somebody's assigned at the last minute or something, you know, maybe have a mentor work with them at the same semester. But I think especially since things can get started now, I don't know. I think that most people should be able to get it done. I would say start earlier. If it's for fall, don't wait until late summer, because that certificate will be a lot of... it could be a little iterative, you know, in terms of, oh, this is how you think you're showing Title V or discussion or, you know, pronto or something like that, or you don't have it, can you put it in there so that we can see it and make sure?
Shirley, can I say something?
Yeah, right.
Rick Monzon, I'm also on the DE Advisory Committee, but I'm also working on scheduling right now for fall with my dean. And I put down, you know, different instructors for different things. And her immediate question, that Dean's question that came back is, are they online certified? So she was telling me that unless they did the total synchronous schedule, they had to have the online certification. Well, and fortunately for me, all but one of my faculty members have that. And his class was scheduled to be all synchronous anyway, so I wasn't concerned about it. But that was what I got back today.
Yeah. Well, that's because, so what I think would be ideal,
and that was for fall,
if we had a Senate resolution to accept a remote instruction certification, then for any courses for summer or fall that were, you know, a lecture course that now is being taught remotely, then this would assure that instructor knows what to do. And if they, ideally, if this was an instructor that wasn't ever gonna teach an online or hybrid course, then they don't need to do and spend the time and maybe, you know, have that time available in the semester to complete the OTC. So.
What I was scheduling was, it was a 3-unit class that met, it's an evening class that met once a week.
What was that, summer or fall?
For fall.
Okay.
And the way I scheduled it was 2 hours of Zoom and 1 hour of remote. And she came back and said, is that instructor online certified? If not, it has to be all Zoom. So they're not even looking at the remote instruction certificate.
Because this is the first time we're bringing it up.
Right. But what I'm saying is, we might want to clarify, does the certificate allow you to teach part of your class in Zoom and part of your class where you're having to do projects online?
Yeah.
Because when you think about it, you know, Zoom is about 10 times harder to do than a pure lecture. I mean, you got your lecture going, you've got the feedback, you got everybody right there. When you're doing Zoom, you know, people start putting Winnie the Pooh up in front of their camera, or like everybody is here. I have no idea if Jody's here or not. I see her picture, but I don't, you know, she's not moving around. I don't know if she's there. And that's what's happening in the classrooms. And, you know, because I talk with my faculty, we have a Zoom meeting a couple times a week, and that's, you know, the thing that they're talking about. And so we were, they're all online certified, so it wasn't an issue. So we're doing where they said, you know, for after about an hour and a half, it's pretty, you know, I'll stay around. I'm not going to leave just because, oh, it's 9:30, time to go. But the students are expected to be here from this period to this period. And then I'm going to be giving them stuff to do online.
Yeah.
So we might want to clarify if this includes that type of instruction, or is it just...
Well, when we look at those three categories that we were talking about, it would be for the second two.
Right? Not the way Madeline responded back to me, is what I'm saying. Number two, according to her, would require the faculty member to be online certified. That's what I'm saying. We might want to clarify what this is doing here.
I can give some insights if you'd like. This is
sure.
Yeah. So I'm actually the deans are.
There you are.
Yeah. Sorry. So the direction I give them to the deans, of course, is that you know, that when a class is being taught in our, we're just going to call it online class, like you've had forever, that the instructor needs to be certified, right? That's just the basic premise. And I'm waiting for the Senate to, because really the state chancellor's office requires, you know, no extra training for distance education. It's a local decision what kind of training we require. So when we say that a class is remote, whether it's remote live or remote, you know, we're going to call it remote blended, that really this, I'm looking to the Senate to help me give a tool for the deans to guide faculty to have a level of accountability for the amount of training required to engage in a teaching experience. And so if the Senate says, hey, remote instruction, whether it's remote live or remote blended, is going to require this 24 hours of self-paced work, then I will turn to the deans and say, anything that's not online, right, that is remote, is going to have, the people are going to have to be trained in this way. So that hopefully that answers your question, right?
So Jeff, if I understand you, the scenario where I'm saying 2 hours of Zoom, 1 hour of online work, you're saying the remote certificate, if the Senate says that, would cover that scenario. But if I'm teaching my traditional, everything is on Canvas, period, that would require an online teaching certification, no matter whether we're in emergency or not.
And I'm assuming, Rick, that when you say online, what you're really meaning is asynchronous, right? You're saying I've
left
work
yes.
for them to do. Right.
Correct.
So you're doing like a remote blended type course.
No, and I'm talking about the typical online, what we call online now, you know, asynchronous. Required, you know, they work at their schedule to meet the deadlines is the way I tell it to them.
There we go. Yeah. So in that instance, you would say that because it's a remote class, right? It's a remote blended, it's remote. Then they would have to have just these requirements, right? I want that on the screen now.
Number two and three on our last list.
Number two and three on our last list.
Great. Thank you.
And as soon as the Senate makes this resolution, if indeed you go this direction, I'll be communicating with the deans directly on this topic to make sure that everyone's fully understanding kind of the direction.
And, you know, that's a really good point because, it's kind of like toilet paper. So everybody's starting to scramble and we're getting a bunch of, deans and chairs that are saying, I want to enroll all these people in summer. And you know what? We don't have the capacity. And I'm not really sure that all of the faculty that are being enrolled, if this is a regular semester in the spring, would be teaching the online or hybrid course. So I think that we need to be thoughtful about, and I'm telling you folks here, but I'd like to be able to tell the deans and chairs, okay, now look at the list of everybody that's enrolled for summer. And kind of think through, is this the right faculty that you'd like to take these spots for the online teaching certification? Are they going to teach online or hybrid in the future? If not, and this is ratified, then the remote instruction certificate would be the way for them to go.
Could I just throw out there too, this is Monica, that I am not personally opposed to what I'm seeing as the development of a remote instruction certificate. I have done quite a few of those and found them to be extremely useful even before I taught online. So, but with that, I'm just wondering the expectation if we do, if we're trying to set up summer under these conditions and where everybody's at right now, maybe the general feel from faculty about squeezing in something like this right before summer. I could see for fall, absolutely, where there's more time in terms of preparation, but I'm just wondering my thoughts for faculty to be prepared to start a summer completing these 24 hours. I just throw that out there.
Yeah.
Shirley, I have a question. This is Mirari.
Yeah.
And kind of in line with what was just shared is we're trying to prep our teachers to do summer and we were hoping that they would get like their bronze certification, but we're now it's making me wonder whether should we ask them to do the silver certificate because you still have the bronze and you still have the gold, or right. Will they just go into the silver?
So this is a part of Monica's question as well. And, you know, we were thinking about this and it could be that, you know, as a Senate body that we say, we want this remote instruction. If we want, maybe, you know, as part of the plan, because that's what, you know, is needed by May 5th or May 1st or end of May to submit to the CCC is what's our plan. So if our plan is that we're going to have this remote instruction certificate, and then we're going to slowly, you know, we're going to phase in, maybe we say for fall, 100%, either online teaching certified or remote instruction certification. And for summer, you know, the expectation from ACCJC, that's the only thing that's weighing on my mind now, is that we've got to make sure we ensure Title V and accessibility. I think people can do it, but if for some reason they can't, I don't know. We don't have as many faculty in summer, that's for sure. But I know what you mean, Monica. If they can't for some reason, then maybe we have them work with an online mentor during the summer. I don't know. I'm trying to think, you know, outside the box here to help make things work.
Yeah, maybe seeing, I don't know if there's a way to see what, you know, faculty, what we've already done to kind of prepare this particular semester kind of under the circumstances.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of get a little bit of credit for that and how that might translate into summer. I don't know. I mean, I would love to hear more from faculty how they would feel of, you know, is this doable to try and finish out this semester the way we have been, and then also on top of that to be certified for them to teach. So, you know, to be ready for summer. I'm not teaching summer, so I have time summer to get ready for fall. Right. But I would wonder how faculty would feel about that.
Like, yeah,
you their know, thoughts.
Yeah, and the Canvas silver badges. I mean, well, we have 10 hours there, and if you take your time, I think it's 10 hours. But if you've been experienced in Canvas already, it really shouldn't be
right.
It shouldn't take that long, but. Mirari, for CEC requiring the bronze badge, I think that if we're talking, the same thing goes, if we're talking a remote certificate, I think that you, and you're going to mark them, you guys are a little different. We'll have to talk. We've got a meeting set up for tomorrow.
Okay.
Shirley, what's the timing of this? Do you need the Senate to take an action on this today?
Yeah, if we're going to have a resolution... Yeah, Roy, I think if we're going to have a resolution, are there only two meetings left today and the next one?
I don't know that off the top of my head, sorry.
I think we need to take action on it. And at least I can write up for the DE addendum with plan is due May 20th, so we'd want it by mid-May-ish, so we'd have the next meeting, I think, by then, if we can.
Okay.
If not, at least we could say it's proposed and here's our plan right now.
guys, just being on Senate Exec and having some experience here, and Monica Zarsky, if you can chime in, it seems to me this requires an actual resolution to be passed by the Senate with your whereas is and some sort of permanent documentation of the Senate's position given remote instruction and emergency instruction. And so I wouldn't vote on anything today. We can waive the second read if you bring forward a actual resolution, whereas, okay. Resolved, one, two, three, or one resolve. I don't know how many resolves you need, but we need a permanent record of this going forward.
That's correct, Brian. And I think the best option would be is if it was written up, considering the amount of discussion, potentially if the body was fine with waiving a second read at the time of the reading the resolution.
Can I share a couple of points?
Yes, and we want to move on right afterwards. Go ahead.
One is on the big picture, back to the remote certificate and online certificate. I just personally feel that remote certificate should be all that is required for faculty wanting to teach the second and the third option, the remote live and the remote blended. In other words, only the online teaching certificate, that should only be required for people to teach completely online classes. Because now we're talking about getting faculty trained so they can just go through this temporary period. And once it's over, all the faculty would go back to face-to-face. So that's one to share with the Senate. The other one is for Shirley. I don't know what's in the silver certificate. My understanding a little bit of that is the faculty would show that they actually know what the knowledge in the silver badge. And just want to share my experience teaching Zoom. There are some other things that will be useful for faculty to know. And the DE team can fish out those concepts and put it in a training course that would help faculty be better instructors in the Zoom remote environment. For example, like I had to figure out myself how to do breakout session and how to, how to share screen, but then you also need to know enough to help students to share screen. So you have a fully interactive environment. So just getting into the details, but some of those will be useful skills to cover in one of the trainings.
Yeah, so we have that separate special one, William, this right here, you can't see my mouse move, but the fourth bullet, the confer Zoom and Zoom security.
Yeah, but it, as long as it's in there, then that's good.
Yeah, just one, yeah.
And I'd like to ask that we see the document as soon as possible before the next meeting so we can review. Instead of just going in blind in 2 weeks is our last meeting.
Excellent point.
Michael, what you mean the resolution document?
Correct. Okay. Just what your draft is, what it looks like, and how we could provide feedback prior to the meeting.
Okay. Is it possible, Roy, to just take a minute? Because I'm interested as well as what Monica said, discussion on what faculty felt for summer and fall. I'm not and for the to write up the resolution. I mean, I'm trying to come to terms with how we could make sure that for summer, if somebody doesn't have the remote instruction certification, what we can say that we're doing to assure that faculty is qualified and trained. So I'm kind of wondering, well, does faculty think that they can complete this before summer?
Can I chime in?
Yeah.
I like the idea of everyone being ready by fall. Summer, I think right now we're providing maximum flexibility to our students because of all the craziness we've had to switch to, and I feel like it should be extended to faculty.
Amen.
I feel like I've been busier than ever. And so the thought of, I want to do this and I'm going to try and do this because it's going to help me in my course.
Mm-hmm.
But to make it that you have to do it by summer seems almost a little bit not being flexible. You know, I wouldn't do that to my students, basically, and I kind of feel like that should extend to us. So I would strive for it, and I hope everyone would, but again, to kind of make it a requirement for summer, to me, feels a little bit tough. Fall, yeah, I think everyone should be on there for fall.
Okay.
Shirley, this is Reza. I'm actually with Ben with that. I think the amount of workload that we have as a faculty and that for during the spring, I don't see that we can get it done and make it mandatory for summer, but definitely that's possible for fall. It's just my opinion.
Shirley, this is Rebecca. Mm-hmm. I wanted to chime in a little bit. I have online training. I had great mentorship with Professor Castillo in psychology. So early on, he told me, when you're doing the bronze, go ahead and do the silver. You're just kind of expanding or adding on a little bit more detail. So I think that as people are going into the bronze, if they go and like do this, I want to call it like an additional module or another level or another quiz, it doesn't become insurmountable to get to the canvas silver while you're working on the bronze. Totally different story going from silver to gold, at least for me. The second thing I wanted to say was, I haven't had a Zoom bomber. This is my first experience. And to say it was exciting, right, is a positive slant on it. But I think that if we're going in as instructors and launching classes by using Zoom in a situation that we have chosen to go into, that we have a responsibility to our students to protect them from those things. Because, you know, if I have a student who is highly stressed or what have you, and they come into a conference Zoom or Zoom meeting with me, and I can't control those things, then it just becomes like chaos and what will we be exposing the students to as we're opting to teach this summer. And the same thing goes with the accessibility training, right? If I get a student who is partially sighted in my class and I don't know how to make my documents accessible, now what does that mean for that student's ability to legally be in my class and have access to everything that they deserve to have during the summer? Unless we could potentially tell students, you know, don't come during the summer because we're not going to be ready for handling those types of situations. And I would imagine that's against the law.
Mm-hmm. Shirley, hopefully this is enough feedback to get you to at least a starting point resolution. And of course, it could be amended on the floor at the next meeting, but hopefully that's good enough. And we need to move on.
Okay.
Thank you for your work, for the DE advisory group's work on this. And look forward to the resolution for next time. It seems like some of the key issues are dealing with the timing and also just linking this up to the format description that we discussed earlier.
Right, right. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time, everybody.
Brian, we just asked you, we're asking about Senate meetings. You have one on the 12th and one on the 26th in May. You have two.
Great, thank you. So I think this brings us to item 7 about convocation on a Tuesday. We have Maria Aguilar-Beltran and Stephanie Clark presenting this item, and I'm going to try to find that slideshow and put it on the screen. Just a moment.
And can you all hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. Sorry. Okay, so I wanted to present, Maria had to go to another meeting, but I just wanted to, the titles are gone on that. I don't know why.
That's my fault. Sorry about
that. Okay, that's okay.
The font didn't come through.
Oh. But what we're asking is that we consider convocation on Tuesday as opposed to Friday. And th- This is a recommendation coming from the learning and engagement team, which is the Pillar 4 team for Guided Pathways. And it consists of the coordinators for Equity Guided Pathways, Non-Credit Guided Pathways, Non-Credit Counseling, and Professional Development. So learning and engagement is asking for this. And then we also have heard from Mary Hipsch and the Faculty Professional Development Work Group. They're also recommending a change to the time of convocation. We're hoping that a convocation on a Tuesday will allow us to develop a professional development week plan that is all connected. So that the, oh yeah, sorry, Yarik, Outcomes Assessment. Yarik is also a coordinator on the Learning and Engagement team. So we're hoping that this will connect convocation to breakouts and then also to any workshops that we're offering during Professional Development Week. We really want to be a little bit more targeted in what we offer. And we want everything to be related. So we're asking for this because our convocation Fridays tend to make it difficult to implement anything that we learn on that Friday because there's sort of no time left. So we're requesting that convocation be on a Tuesday with workshops after the convocation and also workshops on Wednesday. And then we would be making a recommendation to administration that division meetings happen on Thursday and Friday is sort of clear for faculty to prepare for classes. So this is our proposal. We're just requesting it for this fall as a pilot and then we'll see how it goes, but Farsid wants to hear from the Senate, and if the Senate supports this proposal, they would draw up an MOU for our contract. And I don't know if Mary has anything else to add, if I've missed anything.
No, just that the Professional Development Advisory Committee supports this too, and that's a committee of administrators, faculty, classified staff, and students.
So,
can I just
all right, say, is there any discussion on this item?
Sounds like Ben has something.
It sounds like there's a lot of support for this, but one thing that I'm thinking of is it does kind of make it hard for SAC days, and that's something that we've been trying to grow and that the college has been trying to support, and traditionally that's been a two-day event, Monday and Tuesday, and it sounds like, you know, now the only time would maybe be Friday because, you know, faculty wouldn't be available Thursday. Like I said, just something to throw out there just to think about.
So Ben, you would still have Monday, and I don't know if you were discussing doing SAC days in the evening at all this fall.
Well, so this fall actually doesn't really matter because everything's up in the air and we're actually talking about doing it remotely. And just condensing it down to a one-day thing. But usually it is 2 days, and we do evenings. We do all day and evening Monday, and then sort of like a half-day Tuesday has been tradition. So, I mean, again, it's something that could be worked around. It's just that's the first thing that came to the committee's right. mind when we heard about this was, oh, okay. So it might make it hard to get faculty to help with that, or again, not a good reason to change it, but just throwing it out there.
And we actually are not requesting Monday because that has been a full day for new faculty and for new full-time faculty in the Faculty Institute. So that may not be happening this fall either. I don't know, but that's why we came up with Tuesday instead of Monday.
So this is an action item. I guess if there's any other concerns, and that would be the time to speak those. And we're also open to a motion to approve this pilot for fall 2020 having convocation on a Tuesday.
I have a question.
A question and make a comment.
two questions and comments.
Go ahead, Jorge.
Thank you. The question I have is if the idea of moving it to Tuesday is because then there would be time to do something about it in the following days. So what would happen on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday that would be, I mean, that would justify doing this on Tuesday? Because usually on Wednesday we have Senate retreat, Thursdays right. we have departments and division meetings. So those 2 days are out. So what would happen on Friday?
Well, during department meetings and division meetings, there really would be an opportunity to reflect on what happened at convocation and how this might affect classes and planning for the division during the year. As it is now, we've had some great opportunities on Friday, and it's kind of difficult for people to follow up with really trying to digest what happens in convocation because they're launched right into classes on Monday.
Thank you. And my comment was about, I would ask, I mean, I'm still new to Senate and learning how everything works, but I think normally there is time from one meeting to the next. And I would request, I don't know if that can happen, that we vote on this next time, and that gives us time to get feedback from our divisions. As a senator, I mean, sometimes I have to make decisions myself, but in a situation that is not urgent, I would like to have the opportunity to go to the faculty in my division and get their feedback, because I may support it, but they may not. So I want to make sure that whatever I vote is representative of what my faculty want.
Good point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We can table, should we do, I'm seeing some in the chat, we could table it till the next Senate meeting.
Yeah.
And I can send out the document. Mm-hmm.
I guess I will just say, you know, just sort of a general principle. Obviously, having two discussions on an item is more thorough than having one. Mm-hmm. To balance that, we can repeat this discussion again next week and not use our time efficiently. So that's always a balance, and I realize there's pros and cons to both. Part of what we try to do is get you some information before the meeting so that you can try to get some information, but I realize that 72 hours isn't necessarily enough time to get feedback from an entire division. But I just want everyone to be aware of the trade-offs with how much input we get on the item. If somebody would like to make a motion to table, we're open to that.
I motion that we table this to the next meeting to have time to share it with our division.
I second.
Okay, the there's a motion to table for the next meeting, and that's been seconded.
Second it.
And I think we should just take a vote. Any opposed to tabling this? Can you say no? And all in favor of postponing to the next meeting, say yes?
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes.
Great. So we'll put that on the next agenda. Let me pull up the agenda again and see what's next. So that brings us to an election update. Stephanie, our Secretary Treasurer.
So we received nominations, and I'll be sending out ballots shortly. We have President-elect is Phil Hughes and Jim Isbell. And then for Secretary Treasurer is myself and Yara Gianio. So I will, I've already created the ballots. I'll distribute those this week. And they have to be collected by the end of week 12. So when I send it out, I'll send out the how long the polls will be open and all of that. And I'll be working with Monica Zarsky, past president, on the election. Does anyone have any questions?
Do you want to just say briefly about how this election is different than elections in the past?
Well, we are having to do the election remotely. So there's that. I don't know what else to say.
So, yeah, that's
it's
it.
Been interesting.
Normally, we would have our election using a signed ballot that's been, you know, a double field envelope turned into the mail room or something like that. But obviously that's not practical at this time. So we're using an electronic format. It's using Microsoft Forms. I believe.
Yeah, we're going to use Forms.
We'll send out some instructions on the details, but you'll need to log in. And so we'll make sure that only full-time faculty are voting.
Mm-hmm. I would add, just to kind of support Stephanie, she's helping me sort of do the logistics of finding a platform by which we can do this all remotely. Once that is identified, just for transparency, then I will take it over as far as the votes and the kind of the compiling of all of that information, since Stephanie is on the ballot. So just to let you know that, and that's typically the past president's job anyway. So
great, thank you for that update, and thank you for the candidates running. Mm-hmm. That brings us to reports. The president's report, I'm going to try to do this briefly. I've got some slides that hopefully you can just read them. So there were a few items on the district agenda yesterday, and I'm not going to talk about those. We've already talked about the class format definitions. There was a question earlier about the decision process for deciding what's going to happen for fall 2020. And I'll just say briefly, the chancellor has gotten some input from the academic senate presidents of both colleges. And we've talked about, originally there was a desire in maybe having a task force, but we felt like this needs to be decided soon. So the chancellor suggested that district council could make this decision. The next district council meeting is next Monday. And so some conversations are happening both on the administrative side and also between the academic senate on what we should plan on for the fall. Of course, there are trade-offs. While it would be nice to meet on campus and have everything as normal, that might not be safe. And there's certainly some uncertainties about what will be safe at that time. So those kinds of discussions are happening. Sorry, we don't have a lot of time to discuss that right now, but if somebody did have a comment, I think we do have a sub item on our agenda, so you could comment on that. But the goal is to have a decision possibly by next Monday. On the EW and Pass Not Pass, I actually don't have a lot of new information, but I do want to make sure that you know that there is not a deadline for a student to file for an EW. So at one time, some information had been on our website saying that it was in May, but that's not the current situation. So EW students can apply for that at any time. There's no deadline. If there are issues with retrieving items from your offices and you're getting some pushback on that, if you could just send me an email and let me know that. And then smoking cessation is something that our health office is working on. I think they announced at the board meeting they have a Zoom session or something. They have some kind of event along those lines. And there's also, as you know, an effort for a smoke-free policy that now our facilities committee is taking up, and hopefully they'll be bringing back a proposal for the academic senate to consider. Three other items that came up since this slide. I wanted to just point out Sarah Valencia had put something in the chat, has a link there for student input, and I encourage you to go look for that. Once this meeting ends, that link will go away. I think our college has given out 700 pieces of electronic equipment to mostly students and some faculty recently. Also, there was a recent, I forget the name of it, directive from our state chancellor. Could somebody mute? Who needs to be muted? Normally, our district would be penalized for not hiring enough full-time faculty. That's related to the FON, faculty obligation number. And that penalty has been suspended for this fall. But it still would apply to fall 2021, but that could affect what our district does in terms of hiring new full-time faculty. Also wanted to mention that there's an event for Project Rise, which is for formerly incarcerated students. And sorry, I don't have those details at my fingertips, but if that's something that interests you, let me know. That concludes my report. Are there any questions or comments?
Roy?
Yes.
So as far as the item retrieval from offices, there's at our division meeting for sciences, there are some comments about how difficult it can be to get onto campus, getting the approval and stuff like that. You know, basically no one's been on campus for over a month, or very few people have. And so the risk is a lot lower now. And so some of the faculty, obviously it still would have to be approved, but the speed of the approval process is very slow. And basically people want to get on campus to do things, whether it's retrieve items or for labs, a lot of times people are taking pictures of items or making videos, and they'd like to be able to do that more easily.
Do you mind telling me when was your division meeting?
How long ago? We had one last Wednesday, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I talked with our chancellor on, it was either Thursday or Friday. So if there's still a problem with that, could you let me know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
With regards to the FON, and does the hiring process, is that going to change whatever hires we're slated for? Because we go into, obviously nobody's going to be interviewing during the spring, I don't think, right? So how is that going to impact hiring in the future?
I don't know.
Okay.
We just got this memo today, I believe, and it's quite possible that it will slow down our hiring or prevent some hiring for this fall.
Okay, thank you.
We'll have
Roy and Louise, maybe I can chime in on that.
Okay.
Okay, so I was at the FRC last meeting, and my understanding from it is the chancellors or district level make a decision to not to do a hiring hold, meaning we're not hiring positions that have not gone through. That's my understanding about it. There may be positions that have gone through already that may still end up being hired. At the state level, the state does not hold us to meet the FON obligation for this year, but we're still obligated to meet the FON of last year, like Roy said, in 2020. So from our district's perspective, we just wait until we can come back to face-to-face and things will go back. Exactly what will happen then, I have not been part of that conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Roy? Roy?
Yeah, we can take a quick comment and then we need to move on.
Hi, Roy. This is Leo Pastrana from counseling.
Go ahead.
Hey, is there going to be a new form created for the pass, no pass?
I believe somebody is working on that, but if you could help us find out, that would be great. It would also be good if there were information on the website. I'll try to follow up too, but if you can help, that'd be helpful.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, Secretary Treasurer report.
Nothing other than elections are happening. So
Just a reminder, those junior senators, you are charged with running elections in your area. So please keep on top of that over the next week and a half, because we'd like to make sure that we have every spot filled. So that's all I know. That's all I have.
Is there a time frame, Stephanie, when we should have those results to you by?
No, I mean, it's supposed to, you're supposed to technically run your elections after we run our official elections, probably because, like, let's say if you were in humanities and someone in this humanities senator got voted into office, right? He couldn't serve as junior senator. But so you technically it should run after our official elections, but I would say you could probably now you know who the candidates are, you could probably start running your elections and at least minimally requesting nominations and essentially just run them as soon as possible. You know, we'd like to, I don't think there's a specific deadline for the senator elections in the bylaws, but I'll have to look again.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
That brings us to curriculum, Brian.
Is he here?
We'll come back to that. Planning and budget, William.
So other than the hiring holes that I was referring to, there is not much update from the state because it's too early to tell the impact of COVID. Last time Roy shared that we have some money from the CARES Act, SAC gets about $5.5 million. Half of that goes to students. The district is still, we still have to create a budget for 2021 and adopt that by July 1st. So work is still happening on that front. And I just wanted to share back that we have, I was told that we would get electronic devices for faculty, like Surface Pro and so on, to let the faculty have better tools to do instruction. But anyways, those are the 2 points that I have about the budget report.
Thank you. Did you get one for Stephanie? Accreditation, Monica?
I think Monica had to leave. Is she still here?
Let's keep going.
I think Monica had to go.
Hey, okay. Good afternoon, Yard. Everyone. All right. So, monster meeting. Let's see here. So I have two technology items, articulation between KiwiConnect and Noventive products. Well, we are still waiting for a final word from District IT, as you know, we've been trying to set up a system that will allow for a transfer of SLO statements from KiwiConnect to Noventive to track that. And District has been promising to help, and we are still working on it. As far as the Noventive product itself, resource allocation request has been finalized, and it's in the pilot stages. Then we have, I think that's all I can say about that. We do have a number of people who are interested in looking at the resource allocation request form, and they have been informed. The following stages of Noventive implementation will have to do with program review. So we are going to work on a template or a screen where program review information is going to be added to the Noventive product. Then we are going to have outcomes assessment following that. I will be talking to outcomes assessment committee about our participation at the convocation event, whether that happens on Tuesday or Friday. We are hopeful that we are going to have a role there. And I'm also in touch with the department chairs about the current state of outcomes assessment. As you know, there's quite a bit of disarray that's going on, yet some feel that outcomes assessment should happen now more than ever before, whereas others think that it should be postponed completely. there is discussions about how grading is going to unfold. So I'm in the middle of those discussions. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Yarik. I just realized we skipped over a bunch of items. And so I'm going to take us back. I was a little bit too optimistic. Take us back to facilities. Marty, are you here?
He's here. I think he's gone.
Okay. I'll just give a quick report. You know that they're working on a smoke-free policy proposal. And also, there's lots of progress being made on construction, Johnson Center and the Science Center, I think they said was 94% complete. They have some photos on the facilities webpage if you want to look and see how it looks. StackTax, Susan, I got your slideshow, and I'm going to try to pull that up right now.
Okay. If not, it's okay too, because I sent it in the chat too. I actually just wanted to reiterate that there are a lot of technology resources available for students. And I put that on the slide. And basically the one link that you should know is the one that DE created, the online resources for students. And the rest of those are just more specific links. So there's also moving forward. So if you can share it with students, that would be moving forward. There would be Jesse Gonzalez also sent out a link to a Zoom security recording. I would highly suggest people look at that, especially the PowerPoint that includes some things that you can do. Although if your students are connecting through Canvas, it should be okay. And then the last two things I want to mention is we've been looking at our membership in StackTech, and in terms of faculty membership, there are all the faculty represented are very heavy technology users and also teach technology. And so we'd like a little bit more diversity in terms of the faculty who serve on that committee. And so if you have any interest in how students use technology, how you use technology, technology planning at the college, we welcome anybody, no matter what their experiences with technology is. And the last thing is that the move to self-service is still coming. That project was delayed a bit, but while IT was working on all of these other things. But the plan is to actually still have faculty live in self-service in June. And that's my report.
Thank you, Susan.
Roy, can I mention something real quick? Sorry, Susan, things change, you know, every day. And I found out that the student services or Digital Dawns is no longer distributing webcams. And I think they're also done with laptops. So that's where, yeah, I know. That's where we stand.
Last week, so thank you, Shirley. So no more laptops or webcams.
Well, I guess they didn't have as many they had sign-up days for the laptops and distribution, and then for webcam, at this point, they're with the restrictions for being on campus, they were asked not to distribute just a webcam at this point. So we should not be, we just can't say that.
Okay, I'll take that off of the PowerPoint, and then I'll send an updated one that we can post.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Guided Pathways?
Guided Pathways, we have a couple of events, a few events coming up in May. May 8th, we can learn about success teams from our pilot team that ran with future educators this fall. May 13th, if you want to get involved in Guided Pathways, we're going to have a Guided Pathway forum where you can find out what we've been doing in Guided Pathways, what's changed for us and the students, and then also have breakout sessions to focus on 5 priority areas. So that would be a great way for people who maybe haven't gotten involved in Guided Pathways but want to join us on May 13th. And then May 22nd is our big student success team launch. And that's when all of the success teams that we have been creating this year, we'll meet for the first time. We'll talk about goals, and the teams can talk amongst themselves about some of the goals they might want to set for the 2021 academic school year. Couple other side notes about guided pathways. Guided pathways, we are in discussions about whether or not we can insert some more guided pathways language and formatting to the catalog, but we're not sure at this time if that's going to happen before next year, but it's definitely something that we are conscious of and aware of, but we also are aware that the curriculum office has a very big task right now, moving from CurricuNet Meta, which has caused some problems, into a new catalog publishing module through CurricuNet. So that's my update.
Thank you. Any questions on guided pathways? Okay, I think next is student success and equity. Is anyone here able to speak to that?
I know that Maria had to leave early, but she's going to email me her report, and I will send that out when I have the minutes completed. So I'll send that out to everyone.
Great, thank you. And basic skills, faculty development, Mary?
Yes, we had $122,000 in requests for funding for next year. It looks like we'll be able to fund those requests, but we'll be discussing that at our May 20th meeting. We're also going to have presentations, a couple presentations from SAC Research and a presentation from District Research about the implementation of AB 705 in the fall. Conditions have really changed for math and English instruction as they have for everybody else, but they're going to be drilling down on maybe some of the nuances of what happened in the fall. For example, in English, if I recall correctly, the students who came in with about a C, B minus average benefited quite a bit from the co-requisite classes. So they may have some helpful information for when things return to normal, hopefully. Also for professional development, we can't travel to conferences, but we do have funding that we can use to pay for your online trainings or your online conferences. So please send that information to professional development at sac.edu, and we'll be advertising that in our weekly e-blast on Monday. That's all.
Great, thank you. Any questions there? Well, as we adjourn, I wanted to share with you a quote of the day. It was a highlight for me. I had a chat with my students via Zoom, and it was a very informal, and one of the students who was very polite, but gave this quote, she said, "The only thing I'm looking forward to ending more than COVID-19 is this class." It's a statistics class, and not everyone likes that. So there you go, we're adjourned. If you wanna vote on that, you can vote with the yes, no, or the hang up button. And thank you for sticking it out this long, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you, bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Do you want me to end the meeting, Roy?